The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the home 6010. Fantasy Focus.
Welcome into the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. It's a little weird right now not being on video. A little weird right now not having playoff game, regular season games to recap. But we do have four playoff games to recap, and it's Field Yates and Stefania Bell hanging with you on this frosty Monday morning in Connecticut. It became winter today.
Yes, it certainly did. For some of us who've been in 80-degree weather for 5 days, this is what you call real shock. Not culture shock, this is like shock. Like my body literally went into shock when I stepped outside today.
I packed, so I came down here yesterday and I was making my last minute decisions on what to bring from Boston for a couple of nights, and I brought a coat, but I remember seeing a hat and a pair of gloves and thinking, like, I'm fine. Like, it hasn't been that bad so far this winter.
No.
Things changed abruptly.
It's that bad. And by the way, kudos to us for being here.
For showing up.
Yeah. Yeah. We're playing hurt, the two of us. But apparently, Mike Clay, celebrating his Eagles victory last night, no doubt.
Mike Clay, like, this is overindulged. Very sneaky by Mike.
Yeah.
Very sneaky.
I'm not sure
he texted me in the middle of the game last night, and he was like, I quote-unquote have the flu.
Well, let me ask this question. Here. So Mike texts you that in the middle of the game. And think about how Mike covered his bases in both ways. Right. All right, if the Eagles lose that game, Mike, a diehard Eagles fan, has his bases covered, right?
Right.
Like, they lose. I don't want to be in the day after my team loses. I'm going to be sulking. I'm going to be disappointed.
They're going to make fun of me.
Right. No one wants to be a part of that atmosphere. But if you win, if your team wins, the 6th seed of Philadelphia Eagles with their backup quarterback, Nick Foles, St. Nick, goes to Chicago against the vaunted Bears.
And win on the final play.
You know what you're doing? You're celebrating.
That's right.
Mike probably had like half a beer last night to celebrate. He's a dad of two.
Let's be honest. He was in Philly.
Was he?
You couldn't see where he texted you from, could you?
No, I could not. That is accurate.
See, exactly.
Well, location,
you know what he did do, though? He blamed it on his kids for getting him sick. Which, you know who that sounds
like? It's a chapter
out
of the Matthew Berry Book of Fibs.
Dad of the Year candidates has been whittled down by one. Blame it on the kids.
All right. Well, in any case, right, Field and I are here for the people.
We're here for the people. And what we're going to do we have to hit a sound or anything or no?
No.
Okay, cool.
No, we don't have to.
We'll just do it anyways.
We don't have to do anything.
Okay.
Wait, which one do you want? I got so many to choose from.
Game recaps? We have one of those? I don't know.
No, we don't have a game recaps.
Okay, whatever. We'll just keep talking.
Previewing all the games from across the league.
The Friday Previews. No good news is good news. With Steffi, bad news.
Yeah, I love it. That was perfect.
I haven't heard that one in a while, so
it's
thank you.
Minute.
I
yeah.
enjoyed that. Yeah.
Yeah,
we're dusting off the rust here. Well, so now that we're not doing the show every day, like, other people occupy the studio more, Daniel, so I don't blame you. You might have some people, some intruders, who have messed with your soundboard, right?
That's accurate. There's actually some stuff going on where Keith and Kyle can't hear everything the way that they're supposed to. We think some things changed here in this room.
Uh-oh. So. Someone's been messing with your stuff. Or maybe this is a 2019 technology error. You never know.
Could be.
Or maybe they're dropping a big hint to us about, you know.
We've overstayed our welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
Get out.
You guys are gone.
So there were
but
four
we're not
games.
Gone yet.
We're not gone. There were four games from the wild card weekend. A pretty good weekend, actually, of football. We're just going to recap them with... Listen, we could sit there and break down the fantasy impact and try to size up where Marlon Mack ranks amongst running backs going the next season. We're going to speak a little bit more generally and have some fun here and just enjoy the wild card weekend that was. We've got, as a reminder, our final video podcast of the year next Monday, which is
an
award show. Yeah, it's our
award show.
Should be
love
a lot
doing
of fun.
That every year.
We hand out all kinds of great awards. Daniel, I think, is submitting the ballot to us later on today.
That is accurate.
So
I can't wait to fill out my ballot.
Yeah. Be interesting to see
how
the votes shake out
already.
There.
Yeah.
Perhaps the MVP is a little bit less obvious than it was for the real NFL MVP based off of the fact that Patrick Mahomes got 45 of 50 first team all pro votes at quarterback.
That's pretty amazing.
He's getting, which is another way of saying he's winning the NFL MVP. And he's going to have to, if he wants to keep this season going, beat the Colts, who won 21-7 on Saturday over the Houston Texans. Stefania, interesting game for the Colts to come out like bats out of you know what.
Mm-hmm.
Up early, Eric Ebron catches the first touchdown. The Colts end up going up 14-0 by the end of the first quarter. They're actually driving, had a chance to kind of put the game away, and Andrew Luck is picked off by a defensive lineman after a J.J. Watt batted pass, but never really got that close. This Colts team is sort of fun. They're a year ahead of schedule. Andrew Luck appears to be all the way back.
Yeah, and by the way, he's definitely like given away one of my pallet entries. I mean, he is the comeback player of the year. Some would argue he's MVP potential, that he's in that discussion because he has been consistent and consistently good.
It's almost like we need a second award for here are the clear-cut obvious MVPs, but here are the guys that like deserve to be on a ballot but aren't going to make it, because Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson and Phillip Rivers are all names that come to mind this year of players that aren't being discussed in the MVP discussion.
I had a conversation with somebody this week, and I mentioned Phillip Rivers, and I went, oh, you're kidding. I was like, why? What was your argument?
Yeah.
And they're like, he's never realized his potential. I'm like, well, that is the worst argument against,
like, Ernie Corsi, who didn't draft.
And I was like, wow. It was, but you know what? It was so interesting to me to have this conversation with this friend of mine, because what it shows is like perception just carries over. And that's why a lot of these guys won't win the award.
Right.
It's just a perception thing. Like, he hasn't been as good as he was supposed to be at any point along his career. Forget what's actually happened, but that is the perception, and it colors how people vote.
That's fascinating to me. But Andrew Luck has been awesome. He finished 19 for 32 with 222 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. Don't think this was Andrew Luck's best game, especially from like the middle of the second quarter on, but he didn't need to be that great, because the Colts really won this game with their defense and running the football. Marlon Mack at nearly 150 rushing yards on 24 carries with a touchdown. Remember, they were playing against the number one running defense in the NFL. This kind of felt like a statement game
anymore.
This Colts offensive line.
You know, we were talking about a little bit about this in the pre-show. I feel like the Colts, all these things have come together for them, and it's really stepped up. But you've seen it kind of improve. What's supposed to happen as the season goes on, really accelerate the second half. Andrew Luck's obvious. We knew a year ago, you're talking about whether he's going to be able to return to football, much less to being the guy he was before. But there were questions about the offensive line. There were certainly questions about the Colts defense. There were questions about the run game. Remember, a lot of people, I don't know, Marlon Mack, I'm not sure you can trust him. He had an injury near the start of the season that made it. All these components have stepped up. And in the absence of Jack Doyle, Eric Ebron has, even to my surprise, you know, he's maintained that role in the limelight without the presence of Jack Doyle to be something defenses had to focus on. So I agree with you. All of this coming together at the right time. And the offensive line, I think, not only helps the run game, but it helps the confidence of Andrew Luck. And they talk about the fact that Andrew Luck does everything he's supposed to with that line.
Sure.
So that he will move within the pocket, step up where they create holes for him. Like, his play has improved as the play of the line around him has improved.
I think this is a joke or a statement that's been made about 6,000 times on Twitter, but this is a podcast, so it's a different medium. And I'll just say this. A lot of people, myself included, kind of thought this game was over when T.Y. Hilton showed up to the game wearing
a clown
mask after Jonathan Joseph, the longtime Texans cornerback, said he was a clown earlier on in this week.
He's no clown.
T.Y. Hilton clowned the Texans, 5 catches for 85 yards. Dontrell Inman, who's just been a wonderful find for the Colts midseason, 4 for 53 with a touchdown. Quite the night for the Colts. Quite the afternoon for the Colts, who now get to play the Chiefs at... Oh, my God. Where's our bell?
Oh my goodness.
Has the bell been hijacked?
Oh, okay, I see it. It's way over there.
Thing,
it's
though.
Super
fair.
Far from our... Like, I can't, because we have to explain to people. I'm attached because I'm plugged in with my IFB. But the Bell Grande is so far away that I can't reach
and
it.
And to be fair, every time that we said Arrowhead earlier this year, I had to get in your ear and tell you to ring it, because you would always forget anyway.
Well, because
anyway,
I was
so
punished for a while. We had to stop. Remember, there was the
we
halt. There was
the
moratorium on that. Remember that?
Don't blame Starfanya
on
this one. Let's all play nice. But the Texans, their season is done, because the Colts are going to Arrowhead. For the Texans, a weird game for Deshaun Watson. And the stat was revealed this past week. It gained a lot of traction that Deshaun Watson had not lost a game as a starter by more than a touchdown or one score since he was in high school. This was the first time. Now, the one exception was that he actually tore his ACL in his first year that he was playing at Clemson against Georgia Tech. That was early on in the game. They got blown out, but still an exception. he has been exceptional in most big moments. And on Saturday, he wasn't. Deshaun Watson, this is the first time that I can recall him looking mortal in a massive moment. 29 for 49.
Yikes.
235 passing yards, one touchdown, one pick. Now, he led the team with 76 rushing yards, which might sort of describe the problem here, is that they had no balance whatsoever on offense. Lamar Miller, Alfred Blue, and Deonte Foreman combined.
Combined.
For eight carries and 29 yards.
Yeah, so it was like less than 30 yards rushing.
Yeah, when you get behind big early, which was the case, they were down 14-0. The Texans, and perhaps we should have forecasted this, you know, once they get down 14-0, Stefania, with no Demaryius Thomas and, you know, obviously no Will Fuller. Like, this team was just
nice
not equipped to come
Kiki
back.
It was nice to see Kiki Cutie put up a decent game after being absent for so long with that chronic hamstring issue. I mean, if you're the Texans, you're trying to look for something to look forward to for next year. Kiki Cutie, at least you didn't close the door on the season wondering, is he ever going to be able to get back on the field? So that was nice. But they've been so thin at wide receiver, other than DeAndre Hopkins, who's been amazing all year long, but obviously was not the focal point for them this game.
Yeah, Hopkins was largely held in check, 5 for 37 on 10 targets. And I think this was the classic case of, if you're going to beat us, Houston, it's not going to be because of number 10. It's going to be because of somebody else. He has a grade 3 AC joint spray. I was going to say AX, but that's AC, right?
Right.
Which is up at the shoulder.
Right. So your AC joint is at the point of your shoulder. And typically when you fall hard on the point of your shoulder, the two things you worry about are the AC joint, so right at the tip of the shoulder, or the clavicle, the collarbone. Either clavicle breaks or the AC joint separates. And a grade 3 means a complete tear, means the ligaments are completely disrupted. It's the kind of injury you see in hockey sometimes where the guys have like a part that you see the tilt up. So
right.
They call it a step sign because there's like a step down from your clavicle to your shoulder. And that's a hallmark of a significant separation of your shoulder.
Much like a hockey player. DeAndre Hopkins doesn't seem to be impacted by. I mean, he still plays.
But you heard about how after, like, he was wincing so hard to put on. I mean, that will stay with him for a while. Painful injury. But this is a guy who played hurt since week one.
He has been, to borrow a Matthew Berry line, nothing short of remarkable in a year when wide receivers were fantastic.
Yeah,
I'm not sure it's close that he was the best wide receiver in football this year. Again,
he
great
certainly
years
makes a case
others,
for it,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mike Evans had a quietly great year. Not to be funny at Daniel, but Julio Jones was awesome again this year. Adam Thielen had a remarkable stretch to begin this season. There are a bunch of guys who really showed up. DeAndre Hopkins was the best. The second game was very dramatic on Saturday. The Cowboys win 24-22, a close game at that. Russell Wilson and this Seahawks offense just didn't have enough. Wilson was fine on Saturday night. He completed two-thirds of his passes, 233 yards and a touchdown. He ran for a touchdown as well. Stefania, though, this was a game where they never got going in the one area they have to get going for them to be competitive offensively, and that's on the ground. 24 carries for 73 yards as a team with just one rushing touchdown, a very non-Seahawks performance.
Really shocking after the year that Chris Carson has had as well. I think that's what surprised me the most.
Yeah, 13 for 20. 13
for 20, completely inefficient. And Chris Carson has been something that the Seahawks have not had, which is a feature rusher who's been pretty consistent the entire season. I do think if you're looking ahead to next year, I think they have found their lead back. Like, I don't see any big threat to him right now from Rashad Penny. I think he is, and Mike Davis is a nice compliment, but Chris Carson's their guy.
Yeah, Chris Carson's definitely their guy, and they're going to continue to run the football a ton next year. Seattle, and I think this applies to Indianapolis and Chicago as well, they were ahead of schedule, right? People weren't forecasting the Seahawks to be playing on wild card weekend.
Oh, especially the Legion of Doom became the Legion of, or Legion of Boom became the Legion of Who?
That's right. Whom? Yes. It was very much a year that people forecasted them
and
to
yet,
be at best in transition.
Their defense was strong by the second half of the season. I would say they were fairly consistent. I mean, certainly their defensive backs played remarkably well considering the talent that they lost.
Yep. And find me five better defensive players in the world than Bobby Wagner, and I will tell you that you were watching film of old guys that no longer play the game, like Dick Butkus or players like that. Bobby Wagner was awesome. A moment.
You know
of
who they do need?
More wide receivers?
A kicker.
They do need a kicker because that sort of
that was a disaster.
Game.
Yes.
At the end of the first half, the Seahawks had a chance to attempt a 58 or 59-yard field goal. Very long field goal.
Yeah, I thought it was 57, but yeah, whatever. It was long, over 50.
And they went for it. Now, the problem, I think, with those long field goals is not just that if you, they're high probability of missing, or if they come up short, the team has the opportunity to return it.
Correct.
But also, a kicker is going to have to exert himself more to connect on a field goal that is out of his comfort zone. And that seemed to be what happened to Sebastian Janikowski.
And do you really want your kicker who's exerting himself to be a guy who's about as wide as he is tall? Mm. Clearly not, you know, he's, how old is he? Pushing 40?
He's 40. He's already 40. Yeah.
So 40.
Same draft as Tom Brady.
Has a history of hamstring, groin, soft tissue injuries, which are going to be associated with the kicker position. I understand that. But he does not, he's not the most flexible guy. I mean, sure. If I'm lining up kickers and picking who I think might be primed for injury, he's one of them. And when they lost him, you know, you talk about this all the time in fantasy, they're not carrying another kicker on the squad for that day. So all of a sudden, their kicker became
Michael Dixon, who was an amazing punter, like has been truly, we often joke about punters being overdrafted, right? He's been worth it as a fifth round pick. I think he was the first team or second team all pro punter this year, but he was a fish out of water. They actually opted not to attempt field goals.
Yes, and so you saw them, they did, and I think Chris Carson got that two-point conversion the first time, so they lucked out there, but it defined the game.
Yeah, it did. They went for two on two separate occasions and successfully converted them, which is fine. Where it really reared itself was they were down by 10 late in the game, 24-14, mm-hmm. they score, they convert the two-point conversion with like a minute to go.
Right. So they needed to, A, get into position to have a field goal and then kick a field goal. And the problem came with the position.
Yep. It's a problem. So they attempted a drop kick, onside kick.
Yeah.
And Dixon put it, you know, put
it was basically like a little
yards.
Pooch.
Yeah, like over the first line of defense, or first line of return men, I should say.
Very easy to field for the Cowboys. Like, it almost felt like if he had just dribble kicked it on the ground like a soccer ball, sure. It would have had a better chance of bouncing up in the air and somebody could have gone up
not
and gotten it.
Not to be funny or not to be, you know, to be crass at the expense of the Seahawks, but I guarantee you that every team will be working with other players, whether it's their punter or mm-hmm. somebody on the roster, as this backup kicker this weekend.
Well, and I thought it was interesting when you looked, I forget who it was that they said the stat. So like now with the new kickoff rules, you can only have X number of people on each side of the ball, right?
Yeah.
So that's really brought down the onside kick percentage from that standpoint. I mean, it's crazy low
it's
this
something
year.
Something like 4% convert success.
Yeah.
So like 1 out of 25.
It's insane.
Doesn't it feel like there's got to be a better way?
I mean, I feel like
again, I'm saying that as if I have some sort of solution. Like right. There isn't a solution. But it's like, hey, you can either attempt an onside kick or your quarterback can attempt one throw that has to go 80 yards with the upright.
Right. This is what, you know what, Kyle Bowler would be back in the league because he can
get
down on one knee and hit the yard line and throw it through the uprights.
No,
and
that would be hilarious.
Joe Flacco's the most in-demand quarterback of the offseason.
I actually feel like the only time it works is if it's a surprise.
Yeah.
Because it's the element of surprise that is the difference maker. And nobody was going to be surprised by the onside kick attempt at the end of that game.
Yeah. And so the Cowboys certainly weren't surprised by it. The Cowboys win this game. And I actually think that Dak Prescott Saturday night was kind of the player that we thought.
He looked at best he has all season.
Yeah. It's about where Dak needs to be for Dallas to win. He completes 2/3 of his passes, throws for 226 yards. Has a passing touchdown, has a rushing touchdown, and most importantly, he found Zeke Elliott on 30 separate occasions. 26 of them were handoffs, but 4 catches as well. You know, Zeke Elliott, and we had this conversation a bit before the show started, pretty convincing case, or at least a pretty solid case for Zeke to be the number one player in fantasy next year.
It's, I think what's interesting that we were talking about that we should share here is why is it? What is it that it makes him always fall around number 4? Like in our mind, again, it goes back to the whole perception thing. We cannot picture him as the number 1, yet he led the league in rushing.
Yep.
And I get it, you know, not as many touchdowns, especially to start the year, a bit of a slow starter, but consistent. This is a guy, if you, to the eyeball test, give me a defense, he can run through them. He is pushing guys, stiff arming them out of the way, running over people, has an ability to spot the hole and then run through tackles. It's uncanny to me how a defense can be trying to account for a running back like him and yet can't stop him.
What's crazy is that the reason why he didn't finish as number 1 this year is because he didn't score enough touchdowns,
right.
which I would have banked on the strength of Zeke this year. The number that I think everybody was concerned about was passing game volume. In his first 2 years as an NFL running back, full regular season, Zeke went for 32 and 26 catches. Now, I understood that he's, you know, he sat out week 17 of 2016 and then he missed 6 games last year because of a suspension. This year, he had 77 catches. The fact that his passing game volume went to a new level puts him firmly in the conversation. As a matter of fact, you can maybe make the case that he's the clear-cut number one going into next year.
Based on projection.
Yeah. I think
this is where we need our friend Mike Clay, who's playing hooky today, to come up and tell us if that's true. 9 straight games with over 20 touches, at least 4 catches in every one of those games, according to Thirsty Kyle, which to me speaks to the consistency of Zeke, that no matter what the week was, like, remember at the start of the year when they had no top wide receiver? There was nobody to account for besides Zeke.
He was finding
and he was still just
Zeke,
as productive.
And he continues to be. Think about other running backs that have been limited by that. It's like, hey, we know, like, you can't do anything about it because we're just going to key in on name a running back who has sort of struggled this year. David Johnson, for example, or other guys. It's like, or Leonard Fournette or other Jaguars running backs. And yet Zeke continues to dominate.
And a nice offensive line in Dallas to help out with that as well.
The Ravens win the first game. Sorry, lose the first game on Sunday. My apologies there. Not a slip of the tongue. They lose 23-17 in a game that probably wasn't this close or shouldn't have been this close. The Chargers got up early. Lamar Jackson had, the Ravens, I think all of them were Lamar Jackson, had 3 first half fumbles, 3 first quarter fumbles, I believe. Sloppy, sloppy start for Baltimore, and it kind of felt like one of those games that if the Chargers could just penetrate the defense one time, could really make this out of hand. They go up 12-0 at halftime. Michael Badgley had all 4, had 4 field goals for the Chargers. But for the Ravens, it's kind of a tale of two games. It's sort of a Rorschach test of where you stand on Lamar Jackson's development. You can either look at this and say, my goodness, he was terrible for 3 quarters, fumbled the football a ton, and then with, you know, in the game-winning drive, again, strip sack to end the game. Or you can say, hey, they were down 23-3 in the fourth quarter, which would have been the greatest comeback in NFL history, postseason history, I should say, if they had won. In part because Lamar Jackson had 2 touchdown passes to Michael Crabtree. I don't know, though, Stefania. I don't know that. I think.
And it didn't feel like the latter was the narrative on this game.
Yeah, I don't wake up with, like, this super, like, overly positive taste in my mouth about what we saw from him. It was, listen, the highs of Lamar Jackson are obvious.
Right.
He's the best athlete I have ever seen. Not in terms of, like,
wow,
you know, this year.
Wow, that's
best at quarterback ever in the NFL. He's the best I've ever seen. And some of the design runs are great. Some of the 9 design runs are also great. He had 9 rushes, 54 yards yesterday. But as a thrower, there's so much yardage on the field. And the way they play offense, we said this before the podcast, 3rd and 2 feels like 3rd and 10.
Yeah.
Anytime they've got to throw it, you like your chances. And I don't know that yesterday unlocked the key to just slowing down Lamar Jackson.
It certainly gave a recipe to other teams. I was excited to see what happened in this game because I thought, here come the Chargers, the only team that's had to face him before, who now knows, okay, all we got to do is focus on containing Lamar Jackson. And it worked.
And this was a great stat that was via Next Gen Stats. And I'll read the tweet from Adam Schefter about the personnel usage. Basically what the Chargers did was they went small yesterday. The Chargers yesterday had 7 defensive backs. Base defense includes 4.
Right.
They had 7, so 3 extra defensive backs on 58 of their 59 defensive snaps yesterday. The entire season, the Chargers used 7 defensive backs. You might call that, like in NFL, some people call it penny. Some people call it, like, you know, there are a variety of different uses, different terminologies. Penny is what I was taught growing up, what you call 7 D-backs. They used that 50 times all season. Yesterday, 58. So basically, now listen, it
talk
helps.
About coming in with a plan.
It helps when you've got players like, for example,
Derwin James,
that are so athletic and so capable. It can sort of be a linebacker in terms of alignment, but have the nifty athletic ability of a defensive back. But I think what you're going to see going into next year, when Lamar Jackson will be the starter, by the way, because Joe Flacco, they basically kissed him goodbye yesterday after the game.
That was painful.
That they're going to find out, like, that's going to be the. It may not work, but the blueprint to try to slow down Lamar Jackson is make him run the football and have extra athletes on the field by, and like to mitigate, like, hey, when he breaks the pocket, It's a lot easier when you've got Derwin James right. chasing after someone as opposed to a 250-pound linebacker.
You're minimizing the damage. That's sort of the approach.
Anything that, so I also think it'll be really interesting this offseason, a couple of things. Joe Flacco's gone. It's just a matter of where he goes and whether he's cut or whether he's traded. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves on that because I don't feel like, A, the market has really heated up, and B, Stefania, this is not like Nick Foles, who I think would be a man in demand. Like, I think Joe Flacco will be more of a consolation prize
right.
for people than...
insurance, yeah. if you will, you know, for a team that needs... This is a question, very real question. We've seen a couple teams try, and this was in the Tim Tebow era, to manage two quarterbacks, that one that they bring in for certain package plays.
Yep.
Now, was Lamar Jackson too expensive for the Ravens to ever consider keeping him in that role? Like, they need a pass. They need the arm of a younger Joe Flacco.
Yep.
They need that. The young Joe Flacco that they had combined with Lamar Jackson makes them a real threat. And remember, John Harbaugh was the one who actually floated something like that. Now, he may have been just playing a game. We could say that, but wouldn't it potentially make a team that much stronger if they could really create an option?
I think what you're onto makes a ton of sense. Where I think, and I'm just speculating here, and maybe, and some of it is having lived it a little bit myself, is that coaches are so mindful of player mindset and player sort of mental fortitude. And I think the feeling the Ravens probably would express is Lamar is a guy that we need to commit to fully for him to feel like I am the person that this franchise wholly believes in. And if I take strides, like the only way for him to take the requisite strides that he's going to take is if there's a full
buy-in. To take his lumps and
right?
have
like,
him.
Hey, everybody, you know, believe in me. If you keep Joe Flacco, there's still an element of doubt. And that's not something specific to Lamar. It's just natural.
Right.
And by the way, he turns 22 today. Like, 22 years old. So
right.
this is, like, he's 22.
He's
like, when I was 22, like, I mean, I do dumb stuff at 31 now. But at 22, you're even that much more, like, you know, you're still, like, growing and maturing. I think that perhaps part of it is, you know, before we, like, we don't want him to slide off course because he doesn't feel like we believe in him. Which would be the, and they also, they kind of cast their die yesterday
right.
by talking about how, you know, Joe Flacco after the game saying, it's been a great 11-year run. I'm preaching my time. John Harbaugh's like, he's going to have a market, all this stuff. It's, all right. Fine.
Yeah. They've obviously had that conversation. The reason I ask it, if you went to kids in college right now and you said, you have a chance to play in the NFL, but this is how, and I guess we've seen this experiment before and we know that it didn't necessarily work, but how many of them would say, I would take that chance to be a guy who could contribute on an NFL team versus a guy who doesn't have a prayer of making an NFL team?
Yeah.
And yet there's this, oh, you know, if we don't have our guy think he's the guy who's the leader, this isn't going to work. One day, I believe there will be a team. It's got to be the right coach, the right system, the right management who will find a balance like this because defenses are going to get more creative. I'll be really interested to see what happens.
Probably
because
Sean McVay, let's be honest.
He could do it.
Probably will
if anybody
be.
Could do it, it'd
yeah.
be him.
For the Chargers, they're really... Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, no, you go ahead. You go first, and I'll piggyback on the end of that.
Well, I'm just going to go to the Chargers.
I'm going to talk about the Chargers,
okay,
so that's perfect.
Oh,
okay.
For the Chargers,
fine, then.
There's not a ton of offensive output to discuss. Phillip Rivers had 160 passing yards. Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler had 69 combined yards on 28 rushing attempts. Phillip Rivers had the best run of the game for the Chargers. And if you haven't yet seen it, go find his celebration because he did this little first down strut. It was hilarious. So really this game, again.
I love him,
he's
by
great.
The way.
This
I just
was
do.
A, and this is a super like old and boring narrative, but yesterday was a field position and defense win. For the Chargers, a couple, you know, enough short drives that resulted in field goals. They had a block. Actually, both teams, I believe, had key blocks, in the kicking game. And they had some short fields with Lamar Jackson fumbling the football deep in his own territory. So this was a game yesterday that, like, I'm not taking it away from the Chargers by any stretch, but their offense was not the key, right?
Yeah.
It was the defense. It was their dominant defense that won. Against another dominant defense.
I will say this, because they are advancing now and they will need them. They have both their running backs, both
yep.
of whom Austin Eckler with a groin injury coming into the game where he was questionable, but obviously was able to go. Melvin Gordon with the knee issue that
yep.
he left a little bit
back,
and came
yep.
back. And they'll obviously manage them in terms of their health, but it's nice to know that they will have both of them going into next week.
I think it's fair to wonder, and Stefania, maybe you're going to tell me that's not fair and I should just keep my mouth shut here, but I do think a lot of people, and again, we're past the fantasy season, so it's not about making a lineup choice for you, but since returning from that hip injury, Keenan Allen has gone 5 for 58, 4 for 64, 4 for 37, hasn't been as dominant as he was prior to that when there was a time after the London game where he was wide receiver one, including 5 straight games with a touchdown. It's been a little bit of a slower go for Keenan over the past 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him in terms of if that game flow happens. I think he'll be up for the challenge, but he definitely came back before ideally he would have in a perfect world, but I think he'll be fine.
Good to know. And they have a massive game next Sunday at New England. I'm not counting this Chargers team out. This team is so fun to watch.
That's where I think Keenan Allen will have a big day.
Say very, very cold in the forecast. Daniel, what do you got?
Okay, so now I have a question.
Okay.
And I realize that this is a little bit, it's not hot takey, but it is a question, and I don't usually deliver things like that. But I am curious. We've been waiting to see Mike Williams turn into the guy that he was drafted to be, right? Yeah. Next year, in October, he's going to turn 25.
Yep.
Phillip Rivers, who knows how much longer he's going to continue to play here in this team? Who knows what's going to happen at quarterback afterwards? Plus, they get Hunter Henry back next year. Is there a possibility that Mike Williams
might
not become
the guy? Hunter Henry back before next year, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean,
Williams is a free agent after this year.
Okay.
And with Tyrell being a free agent, I think everything kind of unlocks because right now you've got a guy who's playing a ton of snaps still, right? I mean, Tyrell's playing enough that, like, I think next year, I'm sure Mike Williams is close to an every down player at the moment. I'm going to pull up the game book from yesterday right now to see where he was at. But, like, you're talking about a guy that, you know, like, if there's 85 or 90 targets going somewhere else, like, that right there is enough, right? That's enough to impact your value. It's a fair question, Daniel. But yesterday, Mike Williams, according to the game book, they played a total of 73 offensive snaps for the Chargers. Mike Williams was on the field for 55 of them. Tyrell's on the field for 52 of them. So he missed 18 snaps. Like, you know, that's enough, like, in the course of a game. Travis Benjamin could be a cap casualty. Maybe. I think Mike Williams' year is next year if he's going to ever break out.
I also think that he's 1 year delayed because last year, to me, didn't really count. He was hurt the entire year.
Sure.
I know he was involved in 10 games, but he was not right. And, you know, we talked to him when we were at camp. He had a back issue. Remember in preseason before his rookie season, there was talk. Adam Schefter was reporting it. They were talking about putting him on IR and he would be done for the year. So, and what he told us was that he had problems with the hamstring because of the nerve pain going down his leg that he could never really stretch out. I mean, he did not play like a normal. So his rookie season to me was compromised by the fact that he was injured, never really got to feel it. To me, this is like the year where you got the full Mike Williams healthy. And now that he knows what he's doing, he's got a good rapport with Rivers and all the things that you mentioned. I think next year's big year.
You know, it's funny, Daniel, is you know how like an NBA, and like we don't have this really in football, but like in the NBA, maybe baseball's probably the best specialty sport, right? Like baseball has like designated hitters, or you have guys that platoon, they only hit against righties because they mash righties, but they whiff against lefties every time, et cetera.
Yep.
Like Mike Williams is kind of like a specialty player for the Chargers this season, right? He has 10, it's tied for 6th with 10 touchdowns receiving this year. And obviously he made like some legitimately big plays, right? Like the KC
game. Huge.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Thirsty Kyle did let me know that Tyrell Williams played 130 more snaps than Mike Williams this year. So when you talk about him,
about
not being there. But
yeah, by the way, I'm just assuming Tyrell will sign elsewhere. I'm not.
Totally.
You know,
totally.
If he doesn't, then I'll look like a
But that
dope.
Team has a lot of talent as it is. I mean, with Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler is still involved, Keenan Allen, you're going to get Hunter Henry back. I mean, there's a lot. It's a lot to be able to spread the ball around.
Phillip Rivers talked about that when he was on, and he loves it. For him, it's great. For fantasy, it's not so great because you've got all these places where the ball could potentially go.
Yep. He's a big guy. Looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Huge, yeah. All right, best game of the weekend, I think, was the Eagles against the Bears. And that's not because of the result.
I mean,
but it
was
amazing.
Until the end for the poor Bears fans.
And the Eagles win this one 16-15. I'm sure you all knew that. Let's start with Philadelphia because that's how it's listed on the sheet right now. But Nick Foles was solid in this game, and he was, you know, I remember when I was in scouting, and I was thinking about this yesterday. You know, we have like traits, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, every position has traits, but one of them for quarterback was what we would call clutch production.
Yeah,
and it was fourth
quarter. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. Up tempo, things that were like out of the ordinary. And it was, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to like measure it. You just kind of know it when you see it, right? And you think about guys that have clutch production. Some guys shrivel in the moment.
Right.
Some people rise up in the moment.
This guy.
And Nick Foles is
clearly,
that.
Clearly, right.
That's what he is.
It's almost like there wasn't enough in the start of the season for him to feel it.
Right.
To be that guy.
Enough, right?
I know.
Backwards
it sounds crazy, but he's thriving.
He is thriving when they need him most. He's thriving when it seems like the least thrivable times, if I can make up a word. He throws for 266 yards. He's picked off twice, and it was a bad pick in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Bad pick by Adrian that it was taken by Adrian Amos, and he's picked off by Roquan Smith on a really great play also. But the Eagles, another team, couldn't get anything going on the ground. Darren Sproles, Wendell Smallwood, and Josh Adams, who had one carry, by the way.
It's so weird what's happening.
Yeah,
with
they tallied 22 rushes for 43 yards. Think about that. Like, so far, every team we've talked about except for the Cowboys and Colts has been unable to run the football. Weird theme of Wild Card Weekend. But Nick Foles was great
spread
again.
Spread the ball around.
Spread it out. If you missed the... Here's one thing, one area the Eagles really stand out into. In gotta-have-it situations or the red zone, they are so creative offensively. I mean, they have so many tricks in the bag.
Well, we saw that last year for sure.
And Golden Tate makes a massive catch for them to win this game. It proves to be the game winner.
And I just want to say really quickly as a Lions fan, the idea that both Golden Tate and Eric Ebron are able to find success elsewhere is something that if you're a Lions fan and you're rooting against them, like, shame on you.
Dude, like it's a great trade for the Lions.
Absolutely.
You got a third-round pick for a player that, like, was not going to sign
Probably
back.
Not going to sign with them. And Eric Ebron, in all honesty, like, he was never going to be able, like, it was such a tough spot there for him. Like, both of these
guys. That was
guys,
enough time. That was enough of testing that relationship.
Yeah, like, good for him to be able to go to Indianapolis. Good for Golden Tate to be able to get a win here. Like, they both were great for our team for a long time.
People were obviously disappointed when Golden Tate got traded, but they understood it at the end. Hey, listen, 100%. Like, what is that team if they have him? 7-9?
Right.
Right?
And BQ said that. He was like, part of my job is to be able to look short term as what we have, but also as the GM, I've got to look long term.
And at the time that Eric Ebron got cut, when Adam Schefter, this is what I would do. I bet if you went back and saw a tweet from Adam Schefter, because I remember working on this with him a little bit and talking about this with him a little bit, was, hey, like, they're going to try to trade. He tweeted something to the effect of, like, if the Lions can't get a trade done for Eric Ebron by this date, they will cut him.
Mm.
And, like, the replies were just like, ha, 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 ha. You know, like, what do you want, a bag of peanuts? Like, you know, I'll send you, like, you know, whatever, like, a vase of, you know, like, whatever, 24 roses, like, anything will do to get Eric Ebron off the books. Not one person, when they cut him, said, like, oh, wow, you're going to cut that guy who's due $8.5 million? That's dumb.
Right,
you
right.
know, like, I'm sick of the idea. I mean, it's like, whatever. I don't really want to waste too much energy on it. But Eric Ebron has been much better for the Colts. It was never going to happen for him with the Lions. It just wasn't.
Nope.
For the Eagles, though, Golden Tate does score the touchdown that proved to be the game winner. They ran a variation of Philly Special, where rather than the direct snap being eventually handed off and thrown to Nick Foles, Wendell Smallwood just took the direct snap and tried to Superman over the pile. It comes up short. So what ends up happening is, of course, that the Bears have a chance to come back and win this game. They come up short, just short, painfully short.
Sad. I mean, sad for Cody Parkey. Sad that the way people reacted. I mean, let's be humane.
Bitch,
you know,
please,
people are so awful. And you know, credit to the Bears though for the whole team rallying around him. The whole team basically pointing out where they could have done better to not have it come down to that one kick. The whole idea of the kick was tipped. You know, it wasn't just him. We saw a fingertip touch the ball. But let's talk about the Bears and the turnaround that Matt Nagy, coach of the year.
I think he'll be the coach of the year.
I mean, this is unbelievable.
He's been phenomenal. He was phenomenal for them. And I actually think there was a lot of meat left on the bone for that offense in general.
Like, oh, absolutely.
We kind of like the skill position players, like the offensive line.
Right.
Like, it wasn't a great offensive year for the Bears.
They were inconsistent.
But I think it was actually more of a testament to Matt Nagy because, like, he proved himself to be a CEO. And ultimately, when we see a lot of these coaches get undone is when they're hired and it's like, oh, we hire an offensive coach because we have a young quarterback. And then, like, that coach just miserably fails as a, like just as a head coach because he's so focused on like going there and like only doing his offensive job and scrubbing the offense clean and trying to install a brand new one. Like Nagy did a lot of that, but still managed to do a great job overseeing the entirety of this roster, which is really good.
With a pretty good defense.
Yeah, pretty darn good defense if you ask me. And again, I'm sure you saw the play, but Cody Parkey for the Bears hit the left upright,
the ball dropped,
crossbar, and just, of course, a game of inches being revealed there. Another team, the Bears, that could not run the football. But if you're a Bears fan that's looking forward to next year, as painful as today is, you're probably looking at it like this. In the fourth quarter, Mitch Trubisky played his best quarter probably of the season. He gave them a chance to win. They opted not, and I at the time, and I was on radio, and we were talking about this, like it didn't make sense to us, but they had a chance to use all three of their timeouts at the end of the game. They could have potentially set them up with about a minute and 40 seconds and zero timeouts. Instead, they opted to save one of those timeouts. They ended up with the ball with 45 seconds or 55 seconds and one timeout. Listen, at the end of the day, 43-yard field goal, like, you'll take your chances there. Mm-hmm. The game is not solely on the foot of Cody Parker. At the same time, that's a kick that, all things being equal, you expect him to make. The other thing you're hanging your hat on is that your best player offensively yesterday was Allen Robinson.
Oh,
10 for 143 and a
touchdown.
With
a fantastic catch when it was necessary at the end, and a great pass by Trubisky to put it right where only Allen Robinson could get it. But this made me happy because Allen Robinson, I've harped on this again, these guys who come back from ACL tear, and even though he had his early enough that he was able to start the season on time, they're still acclimating to their newly reconstructed knee. And he had some soft tissue injuries that often accompany these things, guys first year back. And so he missed some time and he got banged up a little bit. But to see him finish that strong, season high catches, season high receiving yards with 143, I think that's great. That bodes very well for the rapport between him and Trubisky going into next season.
Yep, I would agree on that. So the Bears do have a bright future. Some people have pointed out. Sorry, Danny, what do you got?
Oh, we're talking about this here behind the glass. It feels like they don't really know how to use either one of the running backs that they have. Like Jordan Howard, they don't effectively use him game in and game out as a between the tackles power kind of runner. With Tariq Cohen, they don't do this, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and not that there were Cohen's, obviously spurts where they did that. You had games where they did it, but it
Cohen
wasn't
had
effective.
One rush yesterday for 0 yards.
Insane.
Makes you wonder if there
wouldn't surprise me if there was something going on. Running back shopping this offseason.
Jordan
Howard
feels
out,
that way.
Somebody else in.
Yeah.
Like, what you want is, it's almost like Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen are on the extremes, right? Like, Howard can only run it, power run it between the tackles. Cohen can only be used in space. Like, you're almost looking for the happy medium between the two. By the way, Tariq Cohen was named in a first-team All-Pro as a punt return man, so obviously he has a ton of value to them. But, like...
What about Leonard Fournette?
No. It's not going to happen. I don't see that happening there.
Interesting. But Leonard Fournette's going to be a very interesting story for the offseason.
Do you think... Legitimate?
Oh, I'd be surprised if he's back in Jacksonville.
No, I meant in Chicago.
Oh, in Chicago? I don't think in Chicago. No, because I think he's too close to what Jordan Howard is. But here's a good example
recently.
I think they would aim higher than this, but like, look at what Damian Williams has done for Kansas City recently. Is like, you don't have to be this bruiser between the tackles. You don't have to be Tariq Cohen in terms of shiftiness, but like, if you can catch the football, you can run it 15 times a game. Like, we could sort of settle in there. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears, now remember, they have no first-round pick. Worth it for Khalil Mack. But they have their resources this year aren't as ample as most teams because they've laid their foundation. But the foundation's really good, right? So, like, they don't have as many resources in terms of cap space and draft capital, but they don't have as many needs as most teams. Like, a lot of the Bears' success in 2019 will hinge upon how much better is Mitch Trubisky yet?
Yeah.
He still made, what, he had 13 college starts, started like 7 games last year, and another 13 or 14 this year. Like, that's a pretty small sample size for a guy that plays the most important position in sports. So the Bears' arrow is pointing upwards, a disappointing, disappointing finish to the year for them, no question about it. But a great weekend of wildcard football. Typically, the divisional round weekend's the best. You've got 4 games, which is great, and it's, you know, the cream of the crop. It's going to be tough. I think, like, really solid wild card slate.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see looking what we have coming up. So we've got the Colts going into Kansas City to face the Chiefs.
Yep.
And that, I think the Colts have a chance if they can control the ball, keep the ball out of Patrick. You know, if they can run the ball well in Kansas City and control the momentum, I think they have a legit shot. Their defense playing really well.
I think that, so the Colts, by the way, so the schedule for next weekend, just for those that may not be aware of it already, we go into the divisional round weekend and we start with Indianapolis at Kansas City, 4:35. That game is on NBC.
Yeah,
Saturday night, again, TV. The Cowboys. who will travel to Los Angeles, play the Rams.
That's going to be interesting.
Should be a great game there. The Chargers go to New England. That's a CBS game, 1:05 Eastern on Sunday, which is the only there are two games that are being played as sort of like potentially adverse weather situations. Kansas City and New England both should be cold on this weekend. Right. And then Philly goes to New Orleans in the only game that is a rematch this year. The Eagles, they got blown out, waxed last time they went to New Orleans, but it feels like a different vibe.
It does, but that's the one game where I feel like New Orleans has such an advantage. They're on fire right now. Yep. They're playing in their really dome. They got Drew Brees playing as well as he ever has. They've got all facets of their game working, and their defense has been really much stronger, I think, than we anticipated before the start of the season. I feel like that game, New Orleans has a definitive edge. Whereas the other three games, I feel like it's much more wide open.
It does seem like there's a decided advantage for the Saints with the way that the Eagles played last night and with the way that the Saints just being at home. Those first three games are going to be so much fun to watch. Not that Saints Eagles won't be, but I feel like of all the three, watch it. Now it's going to be the other way around.
You know what you're doing? You guys are playing right.
That's right. That's right.
They want you to say, don't believe in us. And if I'm not mistaken, so I know the line for the Saints-Eagles is 8.5, which is the biggest line of the upcoming weekend.
Yeah,
the biggest line this past weekend, the Bears as 6-point favorites over the Eagles. So
wow,
it's 6 points for KC over Indianapolis. That one I heard. 8.5 points New Orleans over Philadelphia, and then I would imagine that we got -7 Rams, says Kyle, and then -4.5 for the Patriots. So. Again, all four teams at home are favored, so great weekend. It's there's great wrinkles to all this, right? I mean, like the Rams, will Todd Gurley play? Can they get back on track? The Chargers have not lost a game outside of Los Angeles this year. Their only losses this year have come in games they actually played at home, or when they played the Rams in Los Angeles. The Patriots, only team to not lose a game at home this year. So something's got to give there, right? The Saints, they are. Perhaps the most balanced team in football. The Eagles, they don't lose in December or January with Nick Foles.
Didn't you say all year long that there's a decided difference between Tom Brady at home and Tom Brady not at home this year?
This year that's been the case, which is the home road split for the Patriots have been something.
So we can't wait for that upcoming weekend. A reminder that we'll be back on Monday, but not recapping the games. We'll be doing a... Award show.
We had a lot of fun with the award show last year, though, too. Remember? Yeah. So we will have it on video.
On Twitter, by the way. 11 a.m.
What could possibly happen?
So we've got that window there. Should be a lot of fun. We've got awards to be handed out, MVP, all the customary ones, plus some with the 06010 flair to them. So that'd be cool.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
In the meantime, keep hanging with us, please. She's StefaniaB87 on Instagram and Stefania_ESPN on Twitter.
Yeah, no more beach pictures.
No more beach pictures. I know. Tough life. You know, it's also weird. It's like your Twitter. So like, whatever. I'll just be a mensch here and just ask for it. It's like, you know, when the season's over, engagement kind of goes down on social media platforms, right? And some of that just because like people aren't having to decide, like, do I start whatever, Tyler Lockett or, you know, name a running back in the flex, right? It's, like, hey, who should I, you know, some of it now, like, so, but like, we're still open for business. You want to ask some questions about life? Find us there.
And the injuries are still happening. People are rehabbing. There's a lot of stuff
basketball
that I'm tracking
content,
in the offseason.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So much. And wait till you hear. There's going to be a lot of storylines.
Yeah. If you want to ask questions about basketball, I'm wide open because I am ahead of both Stefania and Field in our fantasy basketball
team
standings.
Is just an absolute
disaster. I was in a tight race with Schefter yesterday, but I don't know how that turned out yet.
It probably didn't turn out well. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Schefter, just quick.
He's good, man.
He's good. He's hilarious with his.
He's obsessed with his trades.
It's amazing. Adam Schefter.
And no tolerance if you don't get back to him right away on a trade offer. I feel like I'm in like real life NBA.
Schefter because he loves like his
his activity is just like you would expect for his actual work activity.
Amazing.
It's so good.
I'm playing him this week. I'll probably take him down. I actually had it's not going to be. But you know what I love about it is that he what's the expression? I don't know if John Wooden actually. I don't think he was the one that actually you know, coined this phrase, but he was he used to say, don't confuse activity with achievement, right? You know, like just because you're busy doesn't mean that, you know.
Just because you're busy doesn't mean it's worth anything.
But in fantasy basketball, it kind of works because Shefty has a great team every year we play, and he's always making moves. The great Shefty is fun to play fantasy sports with. All right, we're back on Monday on Twitter, live.
Stay healthy, everybody.
In the meantime, enjoy the games this weekend. Go keep chasing those 2019 New Year's resolutions. And Daniel, what else?
And last thing, college football championship.
Watch it tonight. It's going to be lit. Bachelor game is also on ESPN Fantasy, by the way.
That's right.
Let's make college football championship picks, can we?
Yeah.
Real quick?
Sure.
Alabama is favored, I believe, by 6.5 points. But let's
go straight up
with the points or no?
It doesn't make it. Let's pick it with the points because we did it all year long.
Okay. So Alabama 6.5 point favorites. I think Clemson covers. Maybe even wins.
Clemson covers. What do you have for the score?
Clemson wins.
Wow.
24-23. Bring your own guts, baby. What do you got?
I'm going to take Alabama. I mean, I think Clemson gives them a tough matchup, but it's weird. You know what I feel like is really weird? I think the X factor is this whole playing in the Bay Area thing. It's very different for these teams to go west. Not really sure. I mean, there were still some tickets for sale. So as well as those fans travel, I don't know what the stadium environment's exactly going to be like.
Very interesting.
And it's been pouring rain out there, by the way, like huge storms. Although I think that it's settled down. It's going to be clear for the game, which is nice and very convenient for us. But I think it's different. It's a different vibe. So if you told me this was being played in like somewhere in Texas or Georgia or, you know, I would feel differently. It feels like you're taking these two teams out of their element somewhat.
Well, we have a fascinating atmosphere tonight. Obviously, the College Football Playoff Committee wants to rotate the location of it most years. All right, so we got one pick for Clemson, one pick for Bama. Daniel, what do you got?
I'm going to take Clemson in honor of my buddies in Emory. They're big Clemson guys. I'm going to go 37-31.
Ooh, high score.
My goodness. Like no defense in this game.
No defense.
What do you got, Kyle?
I got Bama 33-24. We're going to put this on Twitter, Stefania, so I need a score from you.
Oh, Lord. I got to think. Let's see. I'm going to go. I know how Alabama does, and then they just roll, and then they let the other team come back
they
and
just
make
roll.
It close.
I got it. Well, that was funny.
You know how they do? They roll like with the tide.
Yeah. No, I got it.
You see where I'm going there? Alabama to jump out early. Clemson comes back, makes it so that you want to watch till the very end. I'm a company woman. and I'm going to say 35-31.
Okay, and Keith, you want to bring us on home?
I've got Alabama in a it's going to look like a blowout, 31-20, but it's actually going to be 24-22. It throws a touchdown late to close it out.
How about that?
Wow.
That's precise. You're
getting a play-by-play.
All right, great stuff. Enjoy the game tonight, everybody. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Peace out.
You're in the 06010. Never gonna hustle, in case you didn't know. Matthew Berry, TMR.
You guys go ahead, give me grief for being on SportsCenter for 45 seconds.
I think you could do better than me, because I don't think you could.
Jailbait, Phil Yates.
You're terrible at hashtag improv.
At Phil Yates. At Phil Yates.
Stefania Bell.
Oh, don't let Berry convert you.
Secret squirrel, Daniel Dunn.
Make it happen.
Mediocre.